Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
One of America's most legendary conservationists was Teddy Roosevelt, who would saddle up his horse and ride into the wonderlands of the American lands with John Muir to proclaim the majesty of our natural treasury. His legacy was honored when Theodore Roosevelt Island National Park was created in the Potomac River in the nation's capital. We've come a long way. Congressman Richard Pombo just added Theodore Roosevelt National Park to his short list of parks that need to be sold to raise money to pay off debts. Now that's a real poke with a stick in our national eye. We take a look at this and more when your Voice of the Earth returns here on the Wildside News. We continue our special edition of the Wildside News. Want to buy a national park? As we now go in-depth and talk with a spokesman for the Coalition of National Park Service Retirees, who have accumulated thousands and thousands of years of park experience in their resumes and their memories. How do those who have given their lives to service in our national parks feel about the new vision coming from the secret chambers of government? Today's focus is on our National Park Service and the system, the grand legacy that maintains our natural treasury. We continue our discussion now with Bill Wade, who is actually living in the Tucson area and is a spokesperson for the Coalition of National Park Service Retirees. Bill, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
From what I understand, Bill, you're a National Park Service guy, and people who've worked in the parks know exactly what that means. Give us a sense of what brings you to this point and also to your concerns that you're going to discuss today.
Okay, well, some people refer to people like me as a National Park Service brat, meaning I was raised in the National Park Service, second generation. I grew up in Mesa Verde National Park in southwestern Colorado, and I guess that's where the National Park Service got into my blood. I joined permanently in the Park Service in 1967, and I've been in worked in parks as a ranger primarily, in places like Mount Rainier National Park, Yosemite, Grand Canyon, Great Smoky Mountains National Park, Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area, and then I spent my final 9 years as the superintendent of Shenandoah National Park in Virginia. When I retired in 1997, we moved to Tucson, Arizona, and I started to be engaged in things that retirees do, I guess. But several years ago, a number of us who were retired began to become very concerned about some of the things that were going on, particularly with the current administration and the potential impacts that we began to see on the National Park System and the National Park Service. And so there were enough people that sort of came out of the woodwork of the retirees, you might say, that we just kind of formed what is now the Coalition of National Park Service Retirees. There are now 435 of us, and we're growing a little bit each day. And we're kind of a watchdog group, I guess you could say. We have something like 12,000 years of accumulated experience, and we think that gives us a little bit of heads up on what things are important to the American people and to the legacy that we're going to leave to the next generations in the form of the national park system.
I'd like to get your perspective on the change, and I'd like to start that out with your perceptions on what the National Park Service has meant for so many years. There's a long legacy, and quite honestly, during the 60s and the 70s, I think there was the Park Service was at a really high point in terms of its place in the American ethos. It was a grand opportunity to work for the National Park Service. Talk a little bit about that, because then we want to talk about what's happening now.
I guess the place to start, of course, is with the first national park in the world, which was Yellowstone National Park, created in 1872. And that really set off this grand scheme, I think, that we now know as the National Park System. The writer Wally Stegner called it the best idea that America ever had. And since that time, each generation of Americans, through their elected representatives, have identified and set aside areas to become part of the National Park System, both natural areas and cultural areas. And of course now there are 388 units that are located in every state in the Union now except Delaware, and also in several of the territories. So this represents a significant legacy, I think, on the part of past generations. In 1916, when the National Park Service was actually formally formed, one of the things that is specific about its mission, the legislated mission, is that it will manage these areas that comprise the National Park System and leave them unimpaired for future generations. And so that's the sort of mission that those of us who spent our careers in the National Park Service believed in significantly. And it became a lifestyle, really, to most of us, this belief that what we were really doing is leaving these areas to our children, your grandchildren, and so forth. And so it's in the last several years that we've begun to see what I characterize as kind of a major assault on those values and purposes that the National Park System was established. And it's happened in the last 5 years or so. There have been any number of little things that are involved, such as the encroachment with the full license of the political leaders in Washington, in the Department of Interior and so forth, on of snowmobiles, for instance, in Yellowstone National Park, increasing uses of other forms of off-highway vehicles, personal watercraft and so forth in other national parks. And we're just not very pleased with the way this trend is going, and if it continues this way, we see what we believe will be significant deterioration in those values, and the likelihood that what we now know of as the National Park System won't be around, at least in the form that we now know it, for our children and grandchildren.
What do you think are the beginnings of some of those changes? What's the background of this? From my perspective, it seems as if the world is divided into many different people, but there's types. But when it comes to national parks, it seems as if there's those people who really understand that the parks have a legacy, almost a spiritual legacy or historic legacy, in terms of the American ethos, that really who we are is enshrined. Our connection with the land and our country is enshrined in those parks, and we have seen them almost as a monument to great and wonderful mysteries, and it's critical for our survival and identity. But something has been chipping away at that, when it seems to be led by some people who don't share that perspective. They see parks more as something to be used, something to be recreated in, using whatever means possible. How do we begin to define that difference between people like yourself and myself and those who share the values of preserving these natural places as perfect a natural way as possible versus those that are coming at this from a different perspective?
Well, I think you've characterized that pretty accurately. Through the years, it seems like the political administrations and political leaders that have been responsible for administering the National Park System have been very sensitive to the idea that it is special, that these places do deserve the highest degree of reverence and the highest degree of protection, because they do constitute the heritage, really, of the cultural and natural heritage of this country. Teddy Roosevelt, of course, a Republican president, was one of the people who really advanced the National Park System about as much as anybody. And through the years, it seems like these administrations, some Republican, some Democratic, of course, always understood that. And even in what at the time seemed to be dismal years of the James Watt Secretary of the Interior reign, for whatever reason, although he raised some cane with other public lands, he seemed to understand that the national parks were to be hands-off, and so the National Park System was pretty well protected even in those years. It seems, though, that the current political leadership doesn't share those same values, and or doesn't understand that situation that's gone on for generations before. And my feeling is that they are being very heavily influenced by commercial and other special interests. And I'm talking, I guess, to be even more specific, interests that are involved very heavily with motorized recreational uses of public lands, land rights organizations, and so forth, but particularly the motorized recreational interests, because it seems like that many of the decisions that have been made and are being made right now are those that would open National Park Service areas to significantly greater use and access by motorized recreational interests. And so, you know, if you assume then that there's some belief that these lands have more commercial value than they do heritage value, then I guess you fall into that side of the camp, and you might support those kinds of decisions. But it seems to us that that's flying directly in the face of the generations that have gone on before us who have seen it differently, and who have held the system pretty much intact for, well, almost 90 years now since the National Park Service was established, and certainly since 1872 when the first park in the world was established.
It seems to me that the basic underpinnings of this change come from a new concept, and that is somehow that our national parks are supposed to economically sustain themselves, that they're somehow, if we're going to have these lands set aside, that we have to figure out a way for them to kind of pay their own way, which certainly was not the case in the past. They had their own values to America that we were willing to support, but now there's this new sort of, as in times of grand national debt and some economic challenges that we see out into the future, that is a basis for this concept that these parks should really start making money.
Yeah, this seems to be a particularly difficult time with regard to that, and I suppose it's not the first time, but it's certainly the most difficult time that I can remember in the time that I've been involved with the National Park System, where the economics of, I guess, the society in general are such that there just doesn't seem to be enough money to go around, and so the budget for running the National Park System seems to be diminishing each year, at least in terms of real dollars. And of course that results in cutbacks in staffing, and it involves cutbacks in certainly the educational programs in parks, as well as the resource protection programs. And so one of the ways, you know, that is being responded to offset that is to increase fees, to increase the so-called partnerships and fundraising from private sources. And on the one hand, you know, that's a natural response, and it certainly is helping in terms of the budget efficiencies of the parks, but there are significant pitfalls that go along with that. And that has to do with, if you're talking about raising the fees in parks, obviously then it becomes harder and harder for people who can't afford the increasing fees to go to parks, and so you end up with a visitation that is disproportionate to what the population of the country is, and there are some people who just won't be able to go and visit those parks. Secondly, if you rely on the partnerships and the private entities and foundations and that sort of thing to help with this budget deficiency, it increases the feeling anyway that they have a right to partake in some of the decision making that goes on in parks, and they have a right to be recognized for their contributions and so forth. So it opens up all kinds of things involved with that, such as the decision making you know, becomes less national in its scope and more focused on special interests. And so the more you do that, the more the system is diminished away from being a national system and is more focused on special interests or regional interests. For instance, if you talk about giving gateway communities, those communities that are right near parks, a disproportionate ability to be involved in the decision making. And then it also opens up the idea that this recognition factor begins to get much more commercial, and where does that stop? You know, do you begin to have this visitor center is brought to you by McDonald's or a Starbucks bench outside a visitor center or whatever, and those kinds of things concern us because we think it diminishes those values and purposes of the parks and begins to put them in a more commercial vein, which simply wasn't envisioned, I think, by any of the previous generations that made the system what it is now.
We're talking with Bill Wade, who is with the Coalition for National Park Service Retirees, and this we're going to use that as an introduction, and when we come back, we're going to really discuss now why this has become suddenly so center stage in terms of the debate about the future of the National Park Service. So hold on, we'll be right back.
Just how strange does this get? We find out when we return here on the Wild Side News.